New Sham Radio. 92 FM. This is the Community Hour, and I'm Pete Day. Now, in recent years, large parts of East London, I don't know, look more like a massive building site, yeah? Whilst many people welcome the idea, of course, of tearing down crumbling old buildings and replacing them with something new, it's often said that little regard is taken of the people who live in the area. We often, I don't know, feel forgotten about or even forced out of the area in the name of progress. The process of regeneration is often accompanied by promises from planners and developers of revitalising communities, bringing new homes and employment. But such promises don't always seem to match up with people's experience. Well, here to look at these issues, we'll be joined out live in the studio by Liam Crosby from the Newham-based charity Community Links. Liam, thanks for joining us here on New Sound Radio 92 FM.
Thanks for having me.
OK, go on, can just tell us, regeneration, yeah, in East London, has it been a success story?
Wow, well, I mean, what's clear is it's been a huge story and it continues to be a huge story. We've had, this area, Newham, like other bits of East London, has had pretty much every different regeneration attempt there's been since about the 60s. And that's, at the moment, what we're seeing is just huge amounts of regeneration.
There's cranes absolutely everywhere, particularly people who come from outside London. Friends of mine who come from outside London, they come here and they go, I can't believe it, the amount of work that's going in. And they sort of say, we're suffering, we've got recession going on all out there and out in the sticks and all these other places. They say, come to East London, and they say, there's just building happening everywhere, is it?
It's absolutely phenomenal, the amount that's happening. There's Newham Council estimates there's going to be £22 billion of investment.
£22 billion. I mean, when people talk about these figures, you kind of go... Yeah.
And so what's clear is it really does represent a huge opportunity for the area, a real investment in the area and a belief in the people who live here. But I think what is clear from our experience at Community Links is that opportunity won't be realised by accident. It really takes a lot of direct investment, a lot of long-term social investment to make sure that the new opportunities are open and available to people who live in the area.
And when you say direct investment and social investment, I mean, how does that differ from what do you mean? Go on, explain what you mean by that.
Well, I mean, a lot of those £22 billion are going to be on new houses and potentially new houses for people who are coming into the area from elsewhere. A lot of it is going to be on new businesses, again, coming in from elsewhere. And while that provides a huge opportunity for local people, the links between those new investments and the people who already live here won't necessarily happen just by chance. It takes extra investment to try and build those links. So, for example, the things that Community Links have been doing, we've been in and about the new communities in the Olympic Park, trying to join them up with people who live in...
Right, because it's kind of, it's physically nearby, kind of very separate from what was there, because it was all like marshalling yards and things like that, wouldn't it? And sort of open ground and stuff like that. And of course, so there's that physical barrier between the new people who've moved in there.
Yeah.
But there's also kind of social barriers, I think, as well, isn't there?
Exactly, and I think the legacy corporation around the Olympic Park has been pretty good, really, at trying to break down those physical and social barriers, trying to make sure. So they've invested in, as I say, community workers to encourage people from the local area to come into the park, use the facilities, and mingle with the new communities who are there. So there's a lot to be learned from what's happened there in the park, and hopefully that same kind of focus on really trying to bridge the barriers can be extended to other parts of East London as well.
Yeah, I mean, do you think though generally there is enough being done like that, or do you think they're doing a good job, or do you think it's all like okay so far but must try harder, or I don't know, on the school report, where does it come out on that?
I think in general developers could do a lot more of that stuff, really, considering the huge amounts of money, the kind of physical, the financial money that's going into building in East London, there could be a lot more of it which is directed at trying to build the social links around those new infrastructures.
There's some sort of statutory thing, is it section 106 or something? Can you explain can you explain something about that?
Yeah. So section 106 is a power that local authorities or planning authorities can use when a new developer says we want to build this new block of flats. Section 106 is a way that local authorities or whoever the planning authority is can say, well, yeah, fine, but if you do that, you need to also build maybe a school next door, or you need to build this other public facility there, or you can give us some money. So it is a way that
Do council see it as a cash cow, or is this something they see as a way of improving the local? I mean, how does it
work? Varies quite a lot. I mean, councils can use it just to try and get some money from developers, which can then sometimes there's issues about how much of that money is reinvested really locally rather than sort of more just generally into the council's pot. Or they can really use it for. To create local facilities. One issue is developers sometimes tend to be a bit reluctant to just hand over the money or the facility to the local authority and tend to be a bit like, oh, we can manage this better, so try and argue that we'll just build our own swimming pool and manage it ourselves, which can really be a problem for local authorities who are trying to, you know, create a coherent leisure strategy across a borough, for example. So I think Section 106 could be strengthened quite a lot to allow local authorities to get more out of developers on that.
Yeah, I mean, the councils actually say, well, look, I'll tell you what, we will give you planning permission if you do, you know, X, Y and Z, or can they do that? Is that how it works?
Work, but they don't have as much, but it's not, they can't use it as much. You know, it's relatively weak, so it doesn't necessarily give the councils the power to get as much from developers as they would need to offset, or that would maybe be warranted given the scale of the investment in an area.
Okay. I mean, thinking in terms of like what I was saying about earlier on about, you know, people from outside London, they come to like East London, they sort of, they can't believe what's going on. Why is it that East London has been this focus of this sort of like regeneration and rebuilding of the areas? Why do you think that is? I mean, it's kind of this Olympic factor, but it was kind of happening before that anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's been happening for a really long time. I mean, obviously, you know, Canary Wharf in the 90s, but even before that as well, there was quite a lot of focus on different regeneration projects for a long time in this area. I think there's a number of reasons. It's partly about the kind of... the long-term sort of relative social difficulties that East London's had, and a lot of high rates of poverty and things like that, and attempts to address that. I suppose the fact that that's continued despite all of this investment shows kind of how much of a challenge it's been to use rent generation to really tackle poverty in East London. But the Olympic Legacy's aim of convergence is obviously...
Convergences?
So convergence is the idea that the legacy of the Olympics should be for all the host boroughs to kind of converge with the rest of London on sort of the rates of poverty here, or the rates of all the different metrics. So I think that's one reason. But then another reason why I think there's so much investment in East London and regeneration is a real kind of... a spot of like what exceptional talent is here, what exceptional opportunity the people of East London represent, and really a bit of investment in them, if it's done right, could be hugely beneficial for so many people in this area, and I think that belief in the potential of the area is another reason why there's so much happening here.
Yeah. One of the questions that's, I suppose, maybe it's an impossible question to answer in a way, is that although, of course, after all these sort of regeneration projects that have gone ahead, people produce figures and they show, oh, well, you know, there's this many more, you know, incomes have gone up and people's school attainments have gone better and things like that. But, of course, it's always hard to know whether that's because new people have moved into the area who earn more money and their kids are doing better at school anyway. Mm. Or is it because of the local people always there are doing better? I mean, is there anything to kind of... you know, to try and, you know, take those two things apart, separate them out, or is it impossible to
actually
do?
That's, well, I don't know if it's impossible, but it's something that really hasn't been the focus of a lot of regeneration. It's kind of been ignored, and I think that's because there's been this huge assumption for so long that if you bring new people into an area or new businesses into an area, the kind of the benefits of that will just seep out and trickle down a little bit into whoever's there already. So planners and developers haven't thought about what does this actually mean for the local community who's already there. The kind of, it will bring some benefits for the area, but it hasn't been thought through what that will mean for the people who live there.
So, of course, I mean, you know, just anecdotally out there, a lot of people will sort of say, oh, yeah, you know, we get forgotten about. I mean, you'll hear that time and time again with different regeneration schemes right away, well, right across London, across the country, if you like. But I've heard that time and time again, that, exactly. Oh, well, they brought all these new people in and things like that. And there's almost like this sort of like this separation. You know, those people live down that road there and over in that estate. And, you know, you get those gated communities and things like that, where people are sort of locked in, so they don't want to have anything to do with the great unwashed who live out there on the main streets and things like that, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, that's really right. I mean, with when you think about how people in Canning Town, where Community Link's headquarters is, think about Canary Wharf, it's really that. It's kind of like, well, we don't have anything to do with Canary Wharf. There's no jobs there for us. There's no way for us to integrate with that huge development, which had huge amounts of money into the, a really very close to Canning Town. So I think that is changing, and planning authorities and developers are doing more to try and... It came back to what I was saying earlier about the need for kind of long-term social investment, which really seeks to ensure the benefits go to the local people, people and the kind of... And the regeneration builds on what's already in an area rather than just attracting things in elsewhere. That's another thing that's happened around the Olympic Park. There's a huge amount of evidence about the real rich... local economy there. There's a lot of local businesses, really, really creative industries, a lot of great local artisans working around the Olympic Park. And so the more that regeneration can kind of encourage those and build on those, as opposed to just incentivizing another company to move into the area from elsewhere, then the more the benefits will be felt by local people, I think, and people will feel part of the benefits of what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's a controversial issue, of course, because there's always the Carpenters Estate, and of course, we've had people here from the Carpenters Estate who maybe, which of course, if people don't know it, that's one that actually borders on the Olympic Park, who maybe see things a bit differently to that. But I'm also thinking as well, in terms of, like, say, somewhere like Canning Town, yeah? And the development's gone down there. It's amazing developments down there. There's great big sort of shiny blocks down there. But, of course, they kind of border on sort of, like, some areas of which must be some of the worst areas, most deprived areas of London when you go down there and see them. And it's, like, kind of... It's almost like, you know, you get the other side of the Rathbone Street market area and you go, like, down that way, down the Barking Road, and you sort of think, oh, my God, this does not look like regeneration at all, does it? So it's kind of... Yeah. You're on the boat or you're not, it looks like. Certainly physically, it looks like that. I don't know socially that's happening or not. I mean, what do you think of that?
I definitely think that that sharp boundary there is a very sharp one. And the Canning Town development's an interesting one because it's taken so long. I mean, people were decanted from, were moved out from that area in, I think, 2004. So it's...
Well, they talked about it even longer than that. I mean, yeah. So I went to school down there and I can remember they even talked about it then.
Well, exactly. I mean, this wave...
And that was a few years ago, yeah.
It's about the third wave of kind of development that area's seen. And this current one, people moved out 2004. So that huge length of time that it's taken with a large bit of that area completely empty, really, has really affected it, I think. And I think that is one reason why there is that kind of very sharp divide there. And that's definitely an area where all this stuff, like trying to really think about how the new areas being created, how the new facilities being created can be mixed and can some of that kind of building the bridges between old and new communities, ensuring that the benefits from the new investments are extended to people who are already lived in the area and surrounding areas.
I mean, how can that be done? I mean, it's very sort of like, very easy for me to say, so, oh yeah, this is what needs to happen, or we're going to sell it. But actually, how do you do that on the ground? It's not obvious to me. I mean, how do you actually go about doing it?
I think it's quite, I mean, it isn't easy, it isn't obvious, I think, but I think there are a few things. One thing is, like, before you get started, you know, knocking down a place and building it up again, really taking the time with the people who live there in the local area to understand what they would like to see from the plan. So that doesn't mean just like a bit of a consultation once you've already made
I think people
plan.
Are a bit consultated out. They've always been asked for filling forms and they think, oh, they never don't listen to us anyway. So,
well, exactly. Yeah. I think sometimes developers aren't very clear about what is and isn't within the remit of consultation. So that makes people think, oh, what's the point in responding? I'm just going to get ignored. I think that sometimes consultations like that happen at the wrong time. It really happens once the plans have been made and people say, well, I might be getting asked about like what colour the pavement should be, but I actually want to be commenting on the bigger things.
That's right. Yeah.
So if that kind of understanding of what the local area wants could happen a lot earlier, then that's one thing that could help. And then after the sort of buildings have happened and the new communities have moved in, I think there's a lot of different things that could be done to try and help those communities mix. So we've got a project at the moment in the Olympic Park, which is a time banking thing. It's called Share East, which is all about trying to get different parts of different people from different communities, so from the more established community who was there before the kind of Athletes Village was built, and from the people who are moving into the Athletes Village and from different parts of that community, all to kind of get involved in the same time banking project, which is just a way to build
time banking. Would you just quickly explain that?
So time banking is where you have any skill you've got, so you might learn how to do really good chapatis or something, you teach that to a group of people and you get some credits, so say it's taking you an hour.
You don't get actually paid in money, you get paid in time credits,
yeah,
isn't that?
So it's
called
all,
like a time banking.
So
yep.
It's not at all money based, it's all time credits, and then you can use those time credits to say, oh, I'm going to get a piano lesson from this person or whatever it is.
Yeah, the idea being everyone's got some skills that they can share with other people, and like rather than all paying each other to do it, they do it in kind, if you like. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, and it means that the benefits are very focused within the community that's involved in it, and also it continues. It should really help build some of those bonds between different people. Yeah.
We're talking about some of the solutions here as well. I mean, do you think that regeneration projects that are happening today are better than the ones that's happened in the past? Have we learned from the mistakes?
There's just such variation of what's happening today. I definitely think some of the things that have happened around the Olympic Park have been pretty positive. So, for example, Westfield Shopping Centre took, I think, 20% of its people were from employees there were from local long-term unemployed people, which is decent. Obviously, you could always do more, but that's a good start, I think. But then again, I'd say over the last sort of four or five years, the direction of travel of regeneration has been towards much more kind of large-scale, private sector-driven regeneration, rather than before that. Things like the New Deal for Communities were a lot more kind of public money involved.
That was sort of was it 70s, 80s, was it?
New Deal for Communities was, I think, the late 90s.
Oh, was it 90? Okay.
Yeah, it was like the sort of the last Labour government's big thing. And so that moved towards a more kind of thing which relies quite extensively on private sector money, makes it difficult sometimes because developers have potentially less interest in private developers probably have less interest in achieving some of these social outcomes than, say, a local authority would have.
Well, yeah, and end of the day, they're answerable to their electorate rather than to their shareholders,
exactly,
I suppose, would be the thing at the end of the day there. Okay, I'll tell you what, we're going to have to go to the break in a minute, but I'm just saying, because you're from Community Links and you produced a report, didn't you, that people could have a look at, yeah?
Yeah, so we produced a
report. Go on, bang your drum. Go on, right on. It's very good as well, actually, I've read it, and sometimes you sort of see these reports and they're very technical and you sort of think, oh, God, I can't get my head around this at all. But this is very readable, isn't it, what you produce? So well done for that. How can people get hold of it?
It's called Regeneration for All. It's one of a series of policy reports we've done. It's available on our website, which is www.community-links.org.
That's it, is correct. Yeah, I said that. Our research department can guarantee that as well. That is in case the one, yeah. www.community-links.org. Yeah, and you can download it from there, can't you?
Yeah.
Okay. I tell you what, we've got to go to the break now. But finally, I don't know, if there's just one thing, one thing that could be done to make the whole process of regeneration, a success in East London, what would that be? What's the one thing that could change? What's the one thing that would really make a difference, do you think?
I think it's all about really ensuring that when people are coming into the area, they're making sure that they're building links with local businesses that are already here. So when there's a new big business coming in, that somehow they're made to take, like when they're outsourcing, when they're taking on people to do parts of their work for them, so say they're getting on a transport company, they get that from a local company that's already doing that, and some of that building the supply chain locally would really help, yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you what, Liam Crosby from the Newham-based charity Community Links, thanks for joining us here on New Sound Radio 92 FM. But I'll tell you, you won't be a stranger, will you? You'll come back again and talk
definitely.
To us about it again. And can you say, I know you said you got to shoot off it a bit, but you will stay, won't you? Because after the break, we've got a special report on gin.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to stay for the gin.
Okay, we'll just crack open a couple of bottles during the break. And stay tuned to New Sound Radio 92 FM.
Advertise on New Sound Radio for as little as £10 per day.